Hello everyone and welcome to the webinar today. I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21 and a local group called Enfield Voices. And this is one of the many webinars we do over time. And today we're going to look at the local economy, but not just the local economy, but how you facilitate and enhance that local economy by developing a sort of local currency. And there are a number of different ways people have done that. And we're going to talk to Diana Finch today about the way she did it in Bristol and what the reasons about it, what the reasons behind it were, and how she hopes it will develop in the future. So Diana, welcome to this webinar. And it's great that you're here. And I know you've done some amazing work in Bristol and it's still work in progress. So maybe we could start, if you could just tell us a little bit about your background.
Thanks, and hello everyone. So I started my career learning bookkeeping and financial management within organisations. And I went from there into a slightly more technical field of designing accounting systems. And then I took a bit of career break to raise my family. And whilst I was doing that career break, I got very involved in community development work. And I realised just how impactful we can be if we put our minds to it. So when I went back into the workplace, I thought, right, I want to work in the nonprofit sector. So I've worked in environmental organisations and social care organisations. But I was always aware that a lot of those nonprofits are focusing on picking up the pieces, the results, if you like, the negative unintended consequences of our economic system. And so when the job at the Bristol Pound came along, I thought, oh, wow, this is very exciting because I get to play a bit more upstream and see if we can actually stop some of those problems occurring in the first place by changing the way our economy works. So I've been at Bristol Pound since, 3 years, just gone 3 years.
Okay, so you've been at Bristol Pound, but some people may wonder, what is Bristol Pound? So could you just explain to us what it is?
Okay, so it's a local currency scheme. There are many different sorts of local currency. So let's just clarify. This is it's a sterling-backed, sterling-equivalent scheme. In other words, it's just like sterling, only it's got extra rules. And it's the rules that are trying to change the way in which the money circulates to create a fairer and stronger local economy for Bristol. So that was the starting point they got together in 2010 and set up the CIC. And then the currency itself started in 2012. And in fact, I mean, we're talking about it in the present tense, but it's basically just ending. We ended the digital scheme last year and the current final set of notes fall out of use completely at the end of September. So I'm very much focused now on what comes next. But we might want to, I don't know, look a bit more at Bristol Pound itself before we go into what we're doing next.
So, I mean, it's not trying to get rid of the market system, is it? It's actually trying to change people's purchasing behaviour and develop a circular economy. Is that what you're trying to do?
So circular economy has got more than one meaning. Most often it's being used to talk about instead of take resources, make things, use them and then lose them, as in create waste, a very linear material flow. When most people talk about circular economy, they're talking about circular material flow. We were talking about circular economy as in the money flow. So instead of, so if we think about a very basic thing, if I go to Tesco's and I buy, my weekly shop there, a little bit of that money goes to pay for the wages of the people in that shop. And most of the rest of the money has immediately left Bristol. It's gone to distant shareholders, head offices, global supply chains. It's not actually helping grow Bristol's economy. It's being extracted from Bristol's economy. So the idea was to try and make that more visible and say to people, why not try and shop at a local shop instead of a big shop, because that will trap money in the city, especially if we can then encourage those small businesses to to localize their own supply chains so that that money is then tracked within a closed loop system within the city of Bristol. So you basically bought your Bristol pounds, you could only spend them in shops that took those Bristol pounds, and those Bristol pounds could only be spent on by those shops with other Bristol pound businesses, in other words, other local independent businesses in Bristol.
So you were trying to involve businesses, you were trying to influence the supply chains. What sort of businesses did you get involved? I mean, the big supermarkets that were international, I guess they would never come into that. It was basically small local businesses, was it?
Yes, so the big chains were not allowed to join. There were one or two exceptions that we made. For example, we allowed the buses to join because we felt it was important that, well, I guess two things. One, there was a feeling that ideally you would be able to live your whole life in Bristol pounds if you so chose. And so there was something about making sure that basic services for people in Bristol were included in the net of what you could do with Bristol pounds. But also we realised that getting our logos on all the buses was quite a smart move in terms of raising awareness. So there were some exceptions, but basically you had to be a local independent business to be a member.
So it was a sort of alternative currency, really, that tried to encourage the local economy rather than the global economy so that you could make people benefit, both businesses and consumers.
Yes, but especially businesses who would then hopefully make profits that would be reinvested in their business and in the city. When Tesco's makes lots of money, they're very unlikely to spend that on Bristol, whereas a Bristol-based business is likely to create more jobs right here in Bristol.
And was the Bristol pound, you know, in your hands, a piece of paper, or did you have a digital currency as well?
We had both. So we had both from the very get-go, because we were interested in it not just being a shop local scheme, but as I say, with businesses using it on in their supply chains. And you know, businesses on the whole don't pay their bills by wandering around with armfuls of cash. They do it with online transfers. So that's why we felt it was important to have a digital currency from the get-go as well as the paper.
So you had both, and I gather you had about 1,500 individuals involved in it and 500 businesses. Now, that's quite impressive. However, it's only a small part of Bristol, isn't it? Yes. Was that a problem? Because if you want your local economy, you've got to get most of Bristol involved.
Exactly. So, and I think this is where we can talk a little bit about why didn't the original vision take off as we had hoped, because we took off very steeply, like, wow, look how much we're growing. In fact, at its height, it was more like 650 businesses plus another couple of hundred that were just accepting the paper money and not part of the electronic system. So I guess the big question is, after we did this, and everyone was thinking, well, that's great, in 10 years time, we're going to be this big and they'll be involving most of the city and we'll be a sustainable, viable currency solution kind of thing. But instead, it's like 6 years on, we were not able to pay the bills. We were still grant reliant. And we were thinking, why did this plateau off and then in fact start to fall away? And I guess there are probably three main reasons. Shall I just quickly?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So the first one, I think, is about tone of voice and marketing. And I think on this, it's not just Bristol Pound. I think it's many green movements or other social movements that have this problem, that you are very clear about what's important to you. And so you say that in a very clear way, and the people who get it, who are already like woke to this issue, pile on and join and everything. And everyone else is like, oh, I don't know what that's about. And I think it can be even worse, especially if the organization or movement sounds a bit finger waggy, a bit like, oh, you ought to be doing this. This is the proper thing to do. And why aren't you doing it this way? It starts to be a bit judgmental, a bit antagonistic, we'd written a lot of stuff saying how awful big business was. And actually I was trying to make some relationships with big business, because if I could get them to use small businesses in their supply chain, that would be a good thing, given that big businesses exist. But they wouldn't talk to me because I was so busy, you know, we were busy in our literature sounding very anti-big business. So we actually, rather than making friends and get, you know, welcome, anyone can come on at any stage, we said, right, if you think enough like this, you can join us. You know, if you're this woke, you can join us. And otherwise, there's probably nothing in it for you. So that's a very self-limiting engagement strategy. And I think we hadn't realized how exclusive we were.
So is that why the Bristol Pound has stopped now? Or has that something to do with COVID?
I think COVID, we were going to be closing anyway, that scheme. You know, within 6 months of me joining, I had realised that we really didn't stand much of a chance of making it work. Yeah, COVID, with all the small businesses closing, it was very difficult to, you know, keep any kind of directory up to date. People were finding it difficult to spend the paper money. And so, yeah, certainly that has hastened its demise, if you like, in the last year. So the other thing is that we didn't really have anything to offer people. So when people said to us, why would I join the Bristol Pound? All we could say was, well, it'll make you feel good. And they were like, well, where's my Nectar points, you know, for shopping locally, or my, you know, rewards or cashback, or, you know, all of these sorts of things that people are very used to with their club card and Nectar card and things. And we were like, well, that's not what it's about, you know. So there was nothing much in it for the people who didn't, you know, if you didn't get this kind of, you know, conceptual thing, there was nothing in it for you. And for the businesses, we had promised them footfall. But of course, when you've only got, you know, 1,600 members spread across the city, that's not a lot of footfall. Plus, those people already cared about shopping locally. So probably they weren't even new customers. They were the same customers paying with wacky new money. So, you know, so that was the second big reason, I think, of why that takeoff, you know, didn't carry on.
But there's some basic principles that are attractive in it, isn't there? Not just the currency, but it was encouraging people to create peer-to-peer learning and skills exchanges. They got together and they could exchange skills with the Bristol Pound, which may not involve businesses at all. And that was quite an important development as well, isn't it? I mean, did that not attract people?
I don't think that did particularly, and we never, to be honest, you know, we never had much of a, you know, we had a business directory, so, you know, where you could go, and some of those businesses were self-employed people doing, you know, coaching or various healing therapies and things. But there wasn't really that infrastructure to enable, as you're saying, kind of peer-to-peer, or I'll dig your potatoes and you can cut my hair. That wasn't really where it was aimed. I think that's much more where Let's is perhaps operational generally, but it wasn't really where Bristol Pound was focused. There was no way of facilitating that.
But you did say, I think, in the material that you put out, that you did want the Bristol Pound. You wanted it to address poverty and also to help us move to a zero carbon economy. I mean, how far did you get down that line? And was that not an attractive approach as well?
I think it's very difficult when you've got Bristol like this. And as you were saying, you know, 2,000 people, let's say, out of 600,000, you know, it's a drip in the ocean, and they weren't even spending all of their money, you know, within that system. So in terms of the proportion of the overall economy, you know, it was £1 million per annum, let's say, circulating through the system, you know, compared to an overall economy of billions. So it was just not enough to make any significant difference that you could measure around carbon or around creation of new jobs or thriving communities, it was just much too small scale. I think if we had been able to power up to 10 times, 100 times, maybe we would have been able to measure something a bit more. I did try, because at first there was no kind of impact measurement going on at all. So one of the things I did try to do soon after I arrived in post was to create a survey where we could ask members how their behavior had changed in various ways and whether that was impacting either social capital or environmental impact. But frankly, I got such low levels of filling in the surveys, as you can imagine, it was very difficult for me to say anything terribly conclusive.
Okay, so I mean, you tried this initiative and it was a great idea, but it didn't spread out as widely as you wanted. But you haven't given in, have you? You're now looking at a different project, you're going ahead of yourself on that, and you've developed what you call Bristol Pay, or are just about to develop Bristol Pay. Can you tell us what Bristol Pay is and how it differs from the Bristol Pound?
There'll be two aspects to Bristol Pay in the longer term. I mean, as you say, at the moment, it's largely a lot of ideas on paper. We're just working with some developers over the summer to create a kind of wireframe architecture and scope out what the minimum viable product might look like that we can develop in the autumn. But we're really at the very beginning of the journey. Anyway, as I say, there will be two aspects to it. One is a real money thing. And the starting point for that was thinking, right, what went wrong with the Bristol Pound was that it didn't operate at a big enough scale that we could make enough money to pay for the platform. If we're going to have another payment platform, it's got to operate at a much bigger scale. So if you look at the amount of money lost to Bristol's economy from digital payments, each time you use your card or phone to pay for something or pay online with PayPal maybe, if we look at the little percentages that go to the Visa MasterCard network and to PayPal and to iZettle and whoever it is, we're talking £60 million a year, roughly, for a city the size of Bristol. If we manage to capture a fifth, let's say, of the transactions in Bristol, that would be, £10 million. Frankly, our little tiny platform is not going to cost that much to operate. So we could be raising money for the voluntary community and social enterprise sector at quite a scale if we manage to do that closed loop payment system for the city that can actually, so yes, we would want Tesco's in there. Yes, we would want, all the high street shops basically as part of that. The more the merrier, because it's about capturing the transaction charges rather than trying to manipulate the market itself.
So how does that work? That's what I don't quite understand, and maybe you could explain it to people. Is it a sort of a credit card of some kind? Is it more than that? What's the mechanism behind it?
So probably, and it's hard to say because we have, at the moment it's not there, but the most likely solution I would say at this point is an electronic money institute regulated method, which is actually in a way very similar to how the Bristol Pound operated, in that you could load up your account, a bit like you might load up your PayPal account as well, and use that to pay for things. And businesses can then meanwhile extract from that account. And all of that money is held safely. It's in a bank account, if you like. It's not used like a bank would use that money to make loans to other people and things, yeah? So with electronic money, there's no debt created. No one is playing poker with the money. It's just you can load money on and you can move it around the system, but without having to go through any external partners. So it's basically, debit Diana, credit Francis, debit Francis, credit Diana. There's no, it's going via whatever, all of these other players in the system. It's just a self-contained system. And what we can do is, for example, set up accounts such that you could have your salary paid into that if you wanted to. One of the important things we're thinking about with this is there are many people that currently don't have a bank account, usually because they are too poor, for example, to have a car or have learned to drive, or they're a recent immigrant and they don't have all the kind of paperwork that the banks would like to see. And this digital economic exclusion is a big problem. I think many people are focused on, well, let's just keep cash because that's the safety net that we need. And I wouldn't disagree that we need cash as a safety net, but ideally we want everybody to be able to have their salary paid into some kind of account, because otherwise you're trapped in a cash economy, often in the grey market, often prone to financial abuse. So this is a non-bank EMI market payment solution that is closed loop, like the Bristol Pound was. So it's just member to member payments.
Okay, so I mean, it's not like the Bristol Pound. It's not an alternative piece of paper or digital currency you call the Bristol Pound. You're dealing in sterling, but you're trying to set up a different type of financial arrangement where the money is local and there's no debt incurred. That's the basis of it, is it?
Yes, but I would say that's still very like the Bristol Pound. The Bristol Pound was sterling. It was sterling with some pretty pictures and more rules, because we decided who was allowed to join that payment platform. Whereas this time we're saying, well, pretty much anyone can join who can get through a basic level of know your customer and anti-money laundering. We're not trying to impose rules. We're just trying to capture transactions. But anyway, that's the least exciting bit, I would say, of what we want to do.
So are you sort of learning from other parts of the world that have done similar things? Barcelona, for example, has got a REC system, real economy currency, which works in parallel with the euro and provides ways in which individuals and communities and businesses can exchange with each other. And I think there are other places in the world that have done similar things. Is yours unique, or are you learning from them?
I'm very much talking to other people. So I'm in touch with various people around Europe. Yes, the REC, yes, the Chiemgau, yes, you know, various others. They're all slightly different. What started the REC was basically a sort of universal basic income type approach that was funded by the local authority, where they wanted to give money but be able to direct how that money benefited their local economy. So, you know, I think there are different systems in different places that are doing different things and with different levels of governmental inclusion. There are others like Sardex in Sardinia, which is very much about mutual credit. In other words, you don't have to start off by putting some money into an account somewhere. It's all just promises and IOUs in effect. So I think that there are just so many different schemes out there. And yes, I'm in touch with a lot of them and I'm trying to learn from all. I think what we're doing is unique. I think both parts of what we're doing is unique. Shall I go on to the second part?
Oh, go on. Go on to the second part.
So the second bit for me is the exciting bit. And it's the bit that maybe the shorthand way of describing it is the non-money. So we all know about money, but, you know, that rules our life most of the time. But there are some problems with money. You know, it doesn't recognize many externalities, things that are external to the market, if you like. The environmental impact and the social impact is just not there. And so what we've been thinking is we could have a range of different tokens that sort of look and smell a bit like money, in that you can count them. You could look at the system and say how much of it was circulating, or how many, you know, what had been transacted, if you like. But you wouldn't necessarily, for example, have to earn them to be able to spend them. Or maybe you couldn't spend them at all. Maybe some of them would be more like badges that you just collect. Or some of them might be linked to real world objects. rather than nothing. So there are a variety of different approaches that we're playing with to try and make visible other sorts of choice than financial choices. So things other than just your purchasing choices. So for example, do I get in the car today or do I get on a bike? Do I go and have a cup of tea with my neighbour who is elderly and isolated or not? And it's to try and normalise and get people to think about that wider impact that they have beyond where they're spending their money.
How do you do that? You've got a sort of new financial arrangement where you try to involve people in a way that's not exploitative, but you also want to encourage a change in behaviour. Now, how do you get from step one to step two?
So first thing is, it's not at all to do with finance. It's non-money, it's not money, it's not about market, it's not about any of that. How will we engage people with it? Well, in the longer term, I think it has to be through the payment system. Where we went wrong, if you like, with Bristol Pound was that thing I was saying, you've got to be this woke to join the Bristol Pound. If you don't get it, you won't join. And on the whole, if you haven't thought about social capital or environmental capital and been thinking about how we could engage people with in thinking in those ways, those people are not going to join. So the idea is that if we have the payment platform, which is ubiquitous and which people can think, oh yes, I know why I'm paying with Bristol Pay, it's because the money is going to the voluntary sector and that's a good thing to do. And then when they're on that, we can then say, oh look, there are these kind of badges you can collect for how many miles you cycle, or there are these thanks tokens that you can use to thank people for doing things. So I think it's how we engage people, I think, is we have to meet them from where they are. We have to start very much in the real normal market economy that we're all used to with money. But then these other things are add-ons, which we can hopefully introduce people to, make it fun, make it engaging. But meanwhile, it means we can count and start to monitor and recognize how the social and environmental behaviours are developing.
I mean, to be successful, you still have to create this critical mass. Do you have some idea of what that is and how long it would take to get to that critical mass?
Well, as I say, the kind of figure we're thinking would be good to aim for would be 20% of the transactions in Bristol, which is probably 20% of the people, roughly, as well. So, I think if we had 100,000 members or more, we'd be starting to think, right, we're making a difference. We're beginning to get, we're working at a sufficient scale where we can make some money, make a difference, but also engage those people in quite significant behaviour shifts. If everyone does a little bit, we can make a big impact.
Well, that's quite ambitious, 100,000. So when do you plan to launch it and how are you going to go about doing it?
Well, first of all, I've got to try and get some money in to build it. We've had enough money left over from various grants and other commercial things that we've done to pay for this little mini discovery design phase with some developers over the summer. I've then got to try and get in around £50,000 to £100,000 really to develop the minimum viable product and then start to experiment and launch that hopefully in spring of next year if I do get the money together and get it all done. And then phase two will be trying to get the payment system added to that. The payment system is more costly to develop because it's a regulated area. So it will require more investment. So let's say we had both aspects of it working in an actual product in my dreams, it will be maybe spring 2023. And then maybe within 5 years of that, we might be starting to hit maybe not the 100,000, but maybe we'd be up at the kind of 20,000 to 50,000 mark by the end of that, which is maybe around the break-even mark.
Okay, so I mean, we've sort of come to the end of the 30 minutes. And let me ask you finally, I mean, if anybody wanted to find out more about what you're doing to help you, to support you, or to see how they could replicate what you're doing in their own area, how would they go about contacting you and knowing more about what you do?
Well, you could start off just with looking at the Bristol Pound website, bristolpound.org, and there's a future vision page on there, which describes, you know, not in a great deal of detail, but some of the ideas that I've been talking through today. But people are also welcome to contact me personally if they want to get in touch. My email address is diana.finch@bristolpound.org.
Okay, well, thank you very much for telling us about that. I mean, the Bristol Pound is interesting because, I mean, many people have done that, the Stroud Pound, the Brixham Pound and so on, but they've all had limitations, and you're looking clearly at how you could go beyond that, how you can create the local economy, how you can actually get people to change behaviour, think differently about their planet and sustainability. And so it's an incredibly ambitious project that you're on. And I'm sure people will be very interested in watching the progress of that. So thank you, you know, for taking the time to talk to us today. And we'll follow it up as you move along, especially when you launch in the spring. So thank you for doing it, Diana.
It's been a pleasure, Francis.
Well, it's been great talking to you. And we'll stop this part of the interview now.